Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Make sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
I got to ask a question about this offense as a whole. It's a fair question. It's got to be asked. I saw the Broncos' offensive side of the ball struggle for two consecutive hours today with very little fight, very little fire. Who's the leader of the offense? Who's the leader of that side of the ball that calls guys together and says, yo, yo, everyone in here, this is garbage. This isn't good enough.
Yo, Joe.
Let's pick it up right now. Let's pick it up. It didn't happen. Wasn't Flacco. Wasn't Emmanuel. Wasn't Rich Scangarello. Wasn't Juwan James. Wasn't Jeff Hierman or another veteran. It feels like they still don't, despite Joe's, if I could steal a Vic Fangio quote, having his union card, NFL card, he's been to the mountaintop. Joe is not that guy.
He's not. I think early on it needs to come from Rich Scangarello, the offensive coordinator. And it's different when it comes from a player. You're going to have some leadership there. But early on, I think it needs to come from that coordinator. He needs to call the guys together. And then maybe he needs to pull, I don't know, Emmanuel to the side and say, hey, get their tails going. Let's go. But he's got to leave his imprint on this offense. And he's got to say this is unacceptable. And this is something we've been talking about since day one when things have gone bad. Like, who is that guy? And that was when Emmanuel wasn't there. I think Emmanuel is that guy. Didn't happen today. But I think right now, early on in with this offense, it needs to come from the top. It needs to come from Rich Scangarello. Do you agree or you disagree there? You would like somebody else? Because like you said, Flacco's really not that guy. I mean, he can get guys going, but that's not his style. That's not how he's going to lead. And
I'll say this, though. If you're telling me it's Rich Scangarello, I'm telling you we're in trouble.
But why?
He's not that guy. He doesn't carry himself with this personality that says follow me.
Who Rich?
Yeah. He doesn't have
he's the offensive coordinator. He better or we're in big trouble. Like if he doesn't have that personality to say, this is what we're doing, we stink, and he can't raise his voice to these guys to get them going, you're in over your head if he can't do it.
Everything you're saying makes sense. I just don't know if Rich has the actual DNA to be that guy,
right.
But I know for sure he doesn't have the equity built up to have other NFL pros follow him. Like who they're learning who Rich Scangarello was when we were.
Sure. Like sure. When he doesn't have a history, he doesn't have a big resume.
Like Vic, when Vic comes in, he is a tenured guy. He has coached in Super Bowls. You just saw him lead the Bears defense a year ago. Vic has the qualifications to say, follow me. Follow me. Even if he doesn't have this like bombastic personality, he's got the resume and the historical value to say, I've done this many, many times. Guys, follow me. Rich, to me right now, is not believable in that regard.
I got you. I'm with you on that. At the same time, I think this is what Rich needs to do. You take your three or four top offensive players. Okay, you take your Emmanuel Sanders. You take your Philip Lindsay, you take your Joe Flacco. Who on the offensive line would you take? Yeah. Ron Leary. You take your Ron Leary.
Okay. Okay.
That's the most tenured guy.
It is.
That guy's a tough guy.
He is, but you might want to think about swapping him out for Juwan James. You might want to think about it because I don't know if Leary's going to be on the field looking in the eyeballs of his teammates.
I'm looking for just veteran leaders.
Okay.
Older veteran leaders that have been here. Maybe it's Juwan James, too.
He's a half a decade in. He's 5 years in.
Yeah, you can get 6 guys in there. Well, you can get Cortland Sutton in there, too, if you want. You say, listen, guys, I'm needing more from this group, and I need y'all to have my back, okay? Because what I saw is not acceptable, and when I see stuff that's not acceptable, I'm going to have to call guys out, but I need you to have my back and be with me. And sometimes I'm going to need y'all to do this for me. But when things are going wrong, I'm not going to tolerate it. Okay. But we're all in this thing together. I know I haven't done it all over the place, but I've been around some great coaches. I know how to get this thing done. And when I see it's not working, I'm going to let y'all know. But I need y'all to be step in step with me and to have my back. And sometimes I needed to come from y'all.
Sure.
So that's what you got to do to get the veteran guys, your core guys to have your back when you are Rich Scangarello, a guy that, you know, hasn't done it and doesn't have a big resume. And some of these older guys might be looking at you like, okay, what are you talking about, Rich?
Right.
You have to have those guys in your corner because the younger guys are going to listen to those guys more so than you. Okay. And so when you get those guys on board with you, now the rest of the team follows offensively. And that's what he needs to do, but it needs to come from him. And you know what? If they don't want to respect him for whatever reason, then
he's got to make them.
He's got to let them know who's in charge.
Well, you heard Emmanuel talking about Zach Azani a couple of days ago. And he's like, you know, we really didn't hit it off. You know,
right?
I was like, yo, you're this college guy. This is different. What do they think about Rich Scangarello behind closed doors? You know, when he's like, he is in charge for the first time with no equity. Hey, guys, follow me. Like, I don't know. I'm down here. I don't.
Stop.
I know.
Stop.
I know. I'm.
Do it one more time for me.
I'm teasing Rich, but in all seriousness, these guys sniff out things that aren't authentic. These guys sniff it out. And if you're not believable to them, that you can help them. That's what he's there for. Like, guys, trust me, I can take your game to another level. And if you're believable, they'll follow you, but they can sniff it out when you're not. And unfortunately for Rich, he's never been put in a position to prove to them until now that he can do it. So it's going to be an interesting dynamic here.
It is. And you're exactly right. It's a tough thing to do. But you have to find that fine line to get those guys to respect you and to, when things are going bad, you know, you have to let them know who's in charge. But a lot of it has to do with having those veteran guys, the core guys, the foundational guys to have your back so that everybody else is in tow also. But I think early on, it's got to come from the leader of the ship. And regardless if he's vocal or if he's believable or if guys want to trust him or not, it's got to come from him. He is the captain right now. Okay. The quarterback, all these other guys are still trying to learn and there's going to be some hiccups in the road. But when things are going like they were today, it's got to come from the man in charge, the captain. And I think that's Rich Scangarello.
I have another question about the dynamics of this coaching staff that I saw bear out right in front of us at practice today. And I'll let you know what I saw. Or didn't see. Next.
Deny my dear. Deny my.
Tomorrow night, baby, I'll be at Fiddler's letting it all hang out. How about that?
What time are we going?
Hey, come with, baby. Come with. Be in that thing early.
I like it.
And late. Looking forward to it. I said going into break that I have some questions about the dynamics of this coaching staff. And this is just, and I want to make sure when we ask this stuff, like, I'm asking a question. It's not an indictment. It's not a judgment. I'm asking a question out loud. Vic has been a one side of the ball coach forever.
Yeah.
He has a one track mind. Find a way to win the play. Find a way to win the day. Find a way to win the game defensively. And I was curious how he would be as a head coach. You have a 50-50 responsibility here. You are half responsible for this one, half responsible for that one, and it equals 100%. That's why you have the HC next to your name. After the practice, you know, he's up there fielding questions and said, hey, how much of, you know, the offense did you see? I didn't see it.
None.
I didn't see it. Now, it was a two-hour plus practice, and he just stayed on one side of the football. He never came over. And I had questions that I wanted to ask him about the offense and things that we saw, and I literally could not ask because I already know he's going to tell me I didn't watch the offense.
I got to wait till I watch the film.
Got to wait till I watch the film. And I knew that's right. What I was going to hear.
I was the same way. I wanted to ask him about the offense because it looks so bad, but he doesn't know because he was never over there.
Right. So I'm just wondering, like, I know he's going to have input, but I'm looking for ownership. You know, not input, ownership. That is just as much. You have a set of twins is what you have. You have a set of twins.
He loves one more than the other.
He does. That's the thing.
Oh, a lot more. He's a defensive guy. He loves the defense. It's like you had a boy and a girl, and you wanted that boy. You know, you're like, huh? Or you wanted that little girl. Right. You're like, get out of my face.
The problem is that the babysitter he has for the other twin is just the next oldest kid who happens to be 3 and a half.
Right.
So, like, I'm just asking, like, I'm looking for checks and balances. I'm looking for ownership. And I just thought it was curious that we had this most important practice to date, and he wasn't there on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, that's what you get when you got a head coach that's calling the defense or calling the offense. Where is he going to spend most of his time? On that side of the football. And when you don't have an offensive coordinator that has done it for a long time, I think you need somebody to kind of watch over that side of the football a little bit more. And you look at the situation, I think at some point, and maybe it's next year when they have situations like this where Vic says, Ed, you call this stuff up. You know what to call. I'm going to see what the heck's going on this offensive side because I'm hearing way too much hooping and hollering from that 49er side.
It's a good point. He has a defensive coordinator.
Right.
It's Ed Donatell.
Ed knows what he's doing.
He's been with
him
for 9 years.
So, and maybe he'll do that tomorrow.
Maybe so.
Maybe he'll make his presence felt on the offensive side a little bit more tomorrow because he didn't like what he saw. And we talked about who needs to take ownership of the offense. I said Rich Scangarello, but at the same time, if Vic Fangio was splitting his time 50-50, I think he would have been over there and let the guys know how unacceptable it was. I know if I was the head football coach, I'd have let them know it. But he wasn't over there.
Right.
And that's an issue, and that's a problem when you get to these types of situations and you have a rookie offensive coordinator. And things aren't going well. And you got a lot of guys that are trying to learn this offense and trying to improve. And they got things that they're worrying about. And, you know, they're worrying about themselves getting open. So it's hard for them, for the players to take ownership. So it needs to come from Scangarello. And if he's not doing it, then it's got to come from Vic. But he's not there.
Right. It's interesting. It's an interesting dynamic at play here. Here's what I'm wondering. I'm wondering if Mike Munchak should be the assistant offensive coordinator. Whatever Gary Kubiak is for the Minnesota Vikings, I'm wondering if Mike Munchak, who's been around this league.
Well, what's that going to do?
Maybe Rich will feel more comfortable leaning on Mike Munchak when he needs to and doesn't feel insecurity that he's leaning on the offensive line coach. Maybe it will add a little bit more of a just veteran presence to a, like when he's, I don't know, when they're going over, I really don't
but
know.
He's
that.
Not, but Mike's not that guy. You never hear Mike raise his voice at all. Like he's a great coach, a great teacher. So what are you looking for from Mike?
About,
like,
I know, but I'm what are you looking for? I'm not looking for a yeller. I'm not looking for like.
But what are you looking for?
I'm looking for acumen. I'm looking for a more proven coach on that side of the ball.
But what is he going to provide? If I think because you got to have one voice, this is the thing. You got to have one voice there. But if things aren't going well, you need somebody to say, let's get this thing going. And that's not Munchak either. But I'm trying
maybe
to
maybe I'm doing a bad job of framing this because like
what you're looking for from Mike Munchak.
Yeah, I'm not looking for two voices.
By adding a title,
I'm looking for Rich to lean on Mike more, and maybe by just working in cooperation, not in terms of a voice, not in terms of calling plays, not in terms of leading meetings. I'm wondering if empowering Mike Munchak will help Rich Scangarello that they work more in concert together just because, again.
But how do we know that they're not working in concert right now? You know what I'm saying? They might be working great together right now. So that's, you know, we just don't know. It doesn't look good. I don't know who that other guy would be. I think it would have to be Vic. because you got a leader of the ship over there, and that's Rich. And obviously he trusts his other guys, and he's leaning. I'm sure he's leaning a lot on Mike Munchak. I know I would. As much as Mike would allow me to, I would lean on that guy. He's been a head football coach. He's been a player. He's a Hall of Famer. I mean, he's one of the best assistant coaches in the league. So I would lean on that guy a lot. But I still think there's got to be one voice, and that's Rich's voice. And if he's not going to do it, then it's got to come from Vic.
Speaking of coaches, real quick, Vance Joseph last night, certainly not a positive showing in the first 5.5 minutes. There was 17 points on the board from the Raiders.
Right under a Bronco.
Correct. Correct.
That's right. He's over there in Arizona.
That's right.
D coordinator.
That's right.
Ooh, what the? Ooh.
It was a rough first handful of minutes when your guys that will be playing were out there. He took it on the chin early. And then speaking of that regime, Joe Woods was out there in the flesh today.
That's what I was going to ask. I didn't see him.
He was out there. He was out there.
Was his hat straight or crooked?
It was backwards. It was backwards. He is the...
So was Wes's.
He was the... Joe Woods is the defensive passing game coordinator. The defensive passing game coordinator.
Well, they did a good job today, so.
They did. All right. Speaking of coaches that were here, the legendary Mike Shanahan was out at practice, and I spied you guys having a private conversation. I want to know what that was all about. Details next. The legendary and incomparable Mike Shanahan out at practice today. Watching his boy, Kyle, coach the San Francisco 49ers in a joint practice. And like the last time he was out there, you guys connected and had a chance to chat. You've only ever speak so glowingly about Mike Shanahan. He's one of your favorites.
Yeah, Mike's the best. And so I walked out to practice. He was just right there, like right where the media stands. I was like, hey, coach. So we started talking for a few minutes, and it's always great to pick his brain just about different things in the NFL and his perspective on things. And so I was just chatting with them about joint practices and how much you can gather from joint practices compared to preseason games. And the thing that was really interesting that he told me was when you look at your roster, like, you know who your main guys are, right? Your main core, 20, 30 guys, you know who those guys are. But when you're looking for your backups, when you're looking for the last 10 on that are going to make this 53-man roster, last 20, this is where you find them in these practices. This is where you see, okay, this is what these guys were doing against us in practice, and this is what they're doing against new competition, guys that are doing different things. How do they react? How do they adjust to those things? That's where you find your core backups, your special teams players, in these practices. And so that was interesting to hear from him.
Always good to see him out there. I'm sure he was, to a whatever degree he was, pleased with what he saw from his son's group.
He should have been. Kyle had them ready to go. He had them ready to play.
And by the way, if you don't think there's a little something extra with Kyle Shanahan, there definitely is. You know, I was talking to Nick Ferguson during the break, and I'm sure he'll reiterate this on the drive, but he said, like, and he, this is a guy, in Ferg, who's been out there with Kyle, been out there as a coach with the San Francisco 49ers.
Last year.
Yep. He said, Kyle Shanahan wants to win every single practice. That's just how he is. So you can be sure a joint practice comes with a more amplified version of that from Kyle, but it's the Denver Broncos. He was up for the Broncos job. The Broncos passed on Kyle Shanahan. That's just the facts. So there's got to be, from a competitive standpoint and a competitor standpoint with Kyle, there's got to be a little some extra, extra juice.
Oh, no doubt about that. You look at his situation and, you know, how much time he spent over there. And now all of a sudden, you know, you're a head coach and you're competing against that team in their house. Absolutely, there's extra motivation. It's like playing one of your former teams. You want to win every game, but you especially want to win those games. You want to play well in every game, but you especially want to play really well against your former teams. And a team that kind of passed you over, you know, whatever reasoning, you know, they didn't quite think you were ready enough to lead a locker room or whatever the reason was. But they pass you over. You want to come in town and show them that you're a really good head coach. And I guarantee you, you know, Kyle spends most of his time on the offensive side of the football, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when he sees his defensive guys, he's like, hey, how'd it go over there? And they say, we kicked their ass. He's like, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. You know, so in that team meeting tonight, he's like, I love that intensity. Heard y'all took it to him. Now, guess what's going to happen tomorrow? They're going to come out ready to fight, and I want y'all to take it to them again. I want to hear the same results as I heard today after practice tomorrow. So I guarantee you he was fired up to hear about what their defense did to the Broncos' offense.
I saw something out there that I can't remember seeing, and I know that it happens to it happens because I know Pete Carroll does it to a certain measurement, but Kyle Shanahan was out there at the start of practice when they do positional breakdowns and guys are running routes on air. Kyle's the quarterback. He's throwing the football to the receivers as the head coach. Now, I don't know. I know Pete Carroll is like famous for chucking the ball around before every practice. I just heard John Clayton talk about that this past week when he hopped on the drive. But I don't know if Pete Carroll's actually like in the drills, like as they're like running their routes and throwing dimes. Kyle's got a beautiful ball.
Yeah, it was one of those drills where it's geared for the defense. And, you know, they drop back into coverage and he's back there and he just kind of throws it up and they intercept it. But he throws the ball well.
He does.
He throws the ball well and players love that. Anytime your head coach gets involved with a practice and is in there with you and doing things with you, not acting like, you know, he's better than everybody else. Guys love that.
Another quick note, from earlier in practice, Kyle Juszczyk was running off the football field. Running onto the football field, rather, at the very start of practice, and you guys had a verbal exchange. I didn't realize that you guys knew each other.
Yeah, he was a rookie when I played my last year. He was a rookie with the Ravens, and so I get there, and you know him and a couple other guys. You know, they don't have a family. My family stayed back here, so I started hanging out with those guys a little bit and form a friendship with those guys. And in Baltimore, what they did, which was a really good thing for the young guys, they pair you up with an older veteran guy. Check in with those guys once a week. Hey, how's it going? What do you need? You give them some life tips. You give them some NFL tips and things like that to help them. And he was my mentee.
So he
was my guy.
All right.
So I kind of was chirping. I'm like, hey. And I don't even think he knew, you know, at first he was like, I'm like, your mentor right here. He's like, I'll talk to you later. I'm like, why don't you ever return any of my texts? It's amazing, man. These guys they forget about you. I'm like, you don't remember everything I did for you? Nah, he's a good kid. And it's great to see him have so much success playing that position. He's done really, really well for himself. So yeah, it's always good to see guys like that, especially guys that I played with. I mean, there's not many of those guys left. It's a long time ago. I finished in 13.
Mm.
So it's cool to see his success that he's had and what he's done for his career. But it's always good to see guys that I played with.
What pick number were you in the draft? Do you remember?
205. Is that right? 30? Or?
Because I was asking, he was picked.
No, 105. 105.
Okay, that's more like it.
Yeah, sorry.
So he was picked by the Baltimore Ravens in the fourth round, just like you were. He was picked number.
I didn't realize he was a fourth round pick.
130.
Okay.
So you must have been early in the first round?
Yeah, I was an earlier one. So okay. I think 105, 106. I don't remember the exact number, but early fourth.
Okay, cool. Good stuff there. I didn't realize that. Rich Gangarello spoke to the media after practice, and I kicked things off and just asked him point blank, how did he feel about the offense today?
What do you think of your side of the ball?
I thought it was very choppy, and I thought it felt like they got after us up front a little bit.
They certainly did.
I felt like it was very choppy, and they got after us on up front a little bit. Yeah, coach. I mean, I think that kind of sums everything up. It wasn't a very well-run operation offensively, and they took it to them. They did. The 49ers took it to them, and that's kind of what we've been saying. It's echoed by what you heard from Flacco, by what you're going to hear continually from Rich Gangarello.
And you said, you mentioned this earlier in the show, and this is worth repeating, there was a Broncos offensive starter that was running off the football field and said what to you on the way out?
Well, it was they took it to us, or they got after us. I forgot. Do you remember exactly how what was said?
I thought you said they put it to us or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, and I was like, wow. And I didn't ask. I was just saying, hey, how's it going? And that was the first words to me. I'm like, okay, well, that's what I saw too. So when a player says that running off the field, you know they felt it.
Right.
Just like we felt it, just like the coaches felt it. And it's, for me, I'm really looking forward to tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, how does this team respond? These coaches are going to be in their tails tonight. And you don't think Reggie Herring and Bill Kolar will be on that defensive line and those linebackers? You don't think Rich Gangarello and Vic Fangio are going to tell this offense how bad they looked and challenge them man-to-man to come out with a little fight and more heart and more intensity?
Well, speaking of that, you followed up my question and asked Mr. Gangarello about the intensity of the 49ers compared to the Broncos.
Coaches seem like they've had more energy, and they were hooting and hollering every time we would look over
yeah.
them, and they brought a lot of energy. What would be your message to your offense tonight?
My message off is, we got to meet their intensity. Obviously, part of it is, I think, you know, they're playing a different style than they've played in the past. And they're doing a good job of it, and it's different for us. So, you know, you're not game planning necessarily for the practice, so we have to adapt and adjust.
Adapt and adjust, and that's really the name of the game.
Yeah, and he makes valid points. He does. You know, if you're not really game planning for a group and all of a sudden you've been practicing against a 3-4 and you're seeing a 4-3 and you've been seeing a lot of, let's say, man coverage and they're playing a lot of zone coverage and things like that. It does take you a little while to get adjusted and get used to doing those types of things and playing against different looks and different fronts. And that's what these practices are for. And so sometimes it won't look as clean as it should. And it shouldn't be too alarming because it is a difficult thing to adjust to when you've been going up against a 3-4. 3-4, 3-4, and then you go up against a 4-3, that's a huge difference.
So not that caught them off guard or by surprise, it's just different.
It's just different, and they haven't been practicing and playing against it that much. I'm not giving them an excuse, though, because you can always match physicality, intensity, and effort. And I didn't feel like the Broncos did that. And the Broncos defense didn't dominate the 49ers offense the way that the 49ers defense dominated the Broncos offense. So, you know, let's not forget that either. The 49ers haven't been practicing against the looks that the Broncos are giving them. They didn't game plan. They haven't been, you know, running scout team over and over and over again. And they went out there and they looked a lot better than the Broncos offense. So I can give them a pass on some things, but overall, it should have been better. And there was things that are inexcusable when you talk about they didn't have the energy.
Yeah.
And it's disappointing because Vic set this thing up for them to come out fresh, healthy, energized, and they weren't. Tuesday, they didn't have helmets. Wednesday, day off. Thursday, helmets. Friday should be less go.
Rich Gangarello was asked about his evaluation of Garrett Bowles, and this is what he said.
Tough to tell from here, you know, until I see the film, it's tough to tell. So I just know that, you know, it's a mix of stuff. It's situational football, and they play a completely different style of defense than we play, so it's our job to adapt to the speed and the style of play overnight and come out here and give it a better effort tomorrow.
To your point.
And he said it, you know, he wanted to make sure that everybody knew, you know, he said it a few times throughout his interview that,
yeah,
hey, it's completely different. This is new. This is foreign. But guess what? Hey, 3 weeks, you're going to see something new and foreign also.
Right.
And, you know, you're going to have a little bit more time to prepare. But at the same time, that can't be a crutch. You know what I'm saying? That can't be something that you just give as an excuse to the guys. Hey, guys, I know, you know, they took it to us, but, you know, we hadn't seen it. So we'll give you a pass, and I don't think this coaching staff will. I think they were disappointed with what they saw, and I think some of these players were disappointed in what they did out there.
Well, you know, let's just go here. We're going to skip ahead in some of this audio because what you just hit on is what I wanted to ask Ritz Gangarello. Is the question is probably included in here, right? Okay, so this is me asking Ritz Gangarello about the timetable and where they're at right now.
Where would you say you're at with your timetable, getting to a point where there's an expectation for success? Because everything is so new. You're new, you got a lot of new parts, young quarterback, but at the same time, you have a real football game in about 3 weeks or so, 4 weeks. Well, where are you at with your being on schedule right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's a journey to the Monday night opener. And I think there's been ups and downs like everyone. We are new. But I feel very confident that as a group, we're beginning to gel. We've seen what we can be. It'll be just like a season. There's going to be good days and bad days. And you have to overcome when you're not at your best and find a way to win. And when you're at your best, you got to ride it and take the other opponent out and just finish everything you do and show what you're capable of when you're maxed out and you're efficient and you're at your peak. And I think we're on the trajectory we want to be on, but again, we still got a couple weeks, so we got work to do.
We're on the trajectory we want to be on. Still have a couple weeks. This is where we want to be. Where would you, I mean, you're out there every single day. Where would you think this Broncos offense is at? There's a lot of factors at play. It's not just a black and white issue. You have a new quarterback. You have a new coordinator who's never done this before. You have so much newness. I'm not going to go through every name. You guys know him, Reisner and James and all these guys. Do you think they're on schedule right now?
They got a long way to go. I was impressed with what I saw in the one drive against Seattle,
mm-hmm.
but it was one drive. But that was nice to see. That's something they got a long way to go and a short time to get there. And that's the issue. And I saw two teams today. And the biggest difference is one team has had consistency. They haven't been like some juggernaut and going to the playoffs the last couple years. But they've had consistency with their coaching staff, with their offensive system. And I saw another team that hasn't. And to me, that summed it all up. Is I saw three quarterbacks that have been in that system. Nick Mullins, Jimmy Garoppolo, and C.J. Beathard, and I saw quarterbacks besides, Joe Flacco, who was in it for 1 year with a different coordinator, that haven't. And you saw their offense look the way that they did, the 49ers, and it looked a lot better than what the Denver Broncos looked at. And I think a lot of it is because of all the change here, because of all the offensive coordinators here, and this thing is new again. It's new, and it doesn't happen overnight. It takes a while to be a competent offense. And
you've been saying that for 5 months now.
I know, but that's just the way it is.
No, I know.
And that's the facts. And
I feel like we need to return to that type of commentary after a day like today.
Yep, and I agree with you because you saw an offense in the 49ers that, I mean, they haven't been a high-powered offense. Now, they lost their quarterback last year. But at the same time, I think a lot goes to what they've done and the foundation that they've laid there. And the Broncos, everything is just new and fresh. And so the Broncos have a long way to go. They have a long way to go and not a lot of time to get there.
Speaking of not a lot of time, I think I was wrong about something here, which isn't any sort of,
revelation.
Right. Or look, I
big
said
announcement.
I said 2 weeks ago, this is Kevin Hogan's last week as the number two. And then Drew Lock went out and balled in the game. And you could, if you wanted to make the switch, that would have been the time. And there I am, out at practice. Kevin Hogan is getting second team reps. It was not Drew Lock in team. And I thought the emphasis that would be on joint practices, your depth chart would be taken a little bit more seriously because you know how they sort of randomize guys and will throw them in and out. Kevin Hogan was out there taking second team reps. Now Drew Lock took some second team reps as well, but to say this is like we've reached the conclusion, the Broncos got where they wanted to go with Drew Lock and we're moving forward with him as the number two, that's not the case. And I asked Rich Gangarello about this.
This is pretty telling too.
And I said, well, I think the question's right in there. Check this out.
It looked like Kevin Hogan would still get some second team reps. Is that still up in the air?
Or absolutely.
On Monday night, do you guys have a decision who's going to be the backup to Joe on Monday night?
No, those decisions. We've had a plan from day one from training camp, and we're executing it. Bottom line is, there's a balance of how you try and develop each guy, but there's a finite amount of reps. And, Kevin... he's played more in this league. There's some familiarity. So, in practice, some of that stuff is, it might even be run plays and things like that. It's just good for Drew to call the plays, break the huddle, run the show. And even though it's like Kevin could probably do that, too, as well. It's just you're trying to let the guys just adapt and evolve as a player. So that's why you're trying to balance out to help each of them compete equally, but yet, help them develop in the long run. So that's all we're doing, balancing things out.
That stood out. One thing stood out, and he's like, we have a plan going into training camp. So plans can change, but at the same time, it seems like they're following through with whatever plan they have. Give Drew Locke a little bit more second team. Give him a little bit more. So it doesn't seem like they've amended that plan at all.
So...
And sometimes I think you should, because sometimes you say, okay, we've seen enough here. Let's just go ahead and make this move. Kevin Hogan isn't as good as we thought he was. It's time to turn the reins over here to Drew Locke.
If you were to guess, according to this Broncos plan, what would be the conclusion of the plan?
That Drew Locke is your backup quarterback.
I agree. And any other answer than that one, to me, doesn't make sense. So when you're seeing the guy... who you hope at the end of the treasure map lands on the X, and he's arriving there a little bit early, I think you change the plan. And I know someone will say, hey, this is contradictory to what you said, because in the past, we've said let's have a plan and stick to it. This one is less of a plan and more of like semantics. We all know how it's going to end.
Right.
Seeing is believing. So at a certain point, let's pivot, acknowledge that one guy is better than the other. The guy we want to be, the guy that John Elway moved up in the second round and called the future, seeing is believing, let's give him more so that he can develop maybe at a slightly quicker rate than taking snaps with the third team.
Yeah, I agree. I think sometimes plans are to be amended and adjusted on the fly, especially in the NFL. You don't know how things are going to go from week to week, day to day. And I think in this situation, it's just time to change the plan up a little bit. But it's interesting to hear that they did have like kind of a concrete plan in place for Drew Locke that they're just following through with. So no matter how good he does or how bad he does, we're following through with the plan.
How would that have worked in Seattle when they paid Matt Flynn and he's the plan, but Russell Wilson's balling and you got something concrete that Matt Flynn's the plan? At a certain point, seeing is believing. And once again, we heard from Rich speaking to Kevin Hogan's experience in this league. And I just don't get it. The guy has one start in this league. That's it. One start. So,
but I think, when they say that, they're talking about how many years in. Right. When you talk about experience, he's been around.
Yeah,
so he's been
true.
Here, what,
that's
three
true.
Or 4 years or whatever it's been. So that's, when you say that type of thing, you're right. He hasn't played a lot of football at all.
I don't even think Kevin Hogan was on our roster last year, was he? Was he on our practice squad?
I thought he was here.
No, we had three quarterbacks last year, didn't we?
He
Brock,
wasn't here?
Paxton and Trevor?
Paxton got cut.
Oh, that's right. I'm thinking of 2 years ago.
Kevin Hogan was here.
I just confused 17 and 18.
Yeah. So, It's Friday.
Who was Case Keenum's backup throughout last year? Because I'm not seeing even a stat register for 2018.
I thought Kevin Hogan was on the roster. He was here last year.
I think he was. I think he was maybe third string. It was Case then who? Who was our backup last year? I don't even remember.
Yeah, it's a lot of quarterbacks. We've had so many quarterbacks since Peyton left.
Well, Chad Kelly was the backup quarterback, right?
Chad Kelly.
There we go.
And Kevin Hogan.
There we go.
Thank you.
Go.
Oh, I couldn't have made it to the weekend without knowing that. How can we forget Chad Kelly?
My man. All right.
Good swag.
Good stuff. We had a lot to react to today, and hopefully we can come back in here Monday talking about the bounce back Saturday that the Broncos had, looking ahead to Monday Night Football and something to be excited about and continue on this road to redemption. Just build. You got punch in the face. Bounce back.
All I want to see tomorrow is more intensity, and I don't want to say more effort, but just more intensity, more enthusiasm. Don't let them just punch you in the mouth and not do anything about it. Not saying go out there and fight, but show some fight.
Right.
That's what I want to see from the Denver Broncos tomorrow.
We got the drive coming up next.